Well, if you will turn with me now to Deuteronomy 15. Deuteronomy 15. And you will see that I've dispensed with that outline that lined up these middle chapters with the Ten Commandments. After the last two chapters, I felt that the outline was too fanciful and didn't work, so I've ditched it. But we are working our way through. We are in chapter 15. This is the second message of four messages that Moses preaches that make up the content of Deuteronomy. Now, this second one is from chapter 5 through chapter 26. That would be a long sermon. Can you imagine standing there or sitting and listening to Moses through all those chapters as he's reciting all this law? It might be a little hard to pay attention, to keep your mind in the loop of what he's trying to say. So that's quite challenging. All right, so well, as we go through this chapter, let's look for the chapter divisions, as that's my practice in this study. So we're looking for paragraph divisions. First one, of course, begins in verse 1. Where does it end? Verse 6. All right, it ends in verse 6. Second paragraph begins in verse 7. And where does that one end? 12. That's right. Well, I have 12 as the next paragraph, but so 7 through 11. And then verse 12 to how far? 17. And then verse 18 to verse 18. It's a trick question. They say the next paragraph is verse 19, at least according to my Bible. Okay, my inspired chapter divisions. And that's the last one, 19 to 23. So let's work through each section and I'll read it and then you think about the theme. Tell me what this is about. And verse 1, at the end of every 7 years you shall grant a remission of debts. This is the manner of remission. Every creditor shall release what he has loaned to his neighbor. He shall not exact it of his neighbor and his brother, because the Lord's remission has been proclaimed. From a foreigner you may exact it, but your hand shall release whatever of yours is with your brother. However, there will be no poor among you, since the Lord will surely bless you in the land which the Lord your God is giving you as an inheritance to possess. If only you listen obediently to the voice of the Lord your God to observe carefully all this commandment which I am commanding you today. For the Lord your God will bless you as he has promised you, and will lend, and you will lend to many nations, but you will not borrow, and you will rule over many nations, but they will not rule over you. All right, so what's the theme of this section, Rob?
Sorry, Debbie and I aren't sure what chapter you're in.
15, Rob.
15, okay. Because it doesn't really say it except this chart up here. It's a little confusing, sorry.
Well, you see the check mark, that'll tell you what chapter we're in. All right, okay, so theme of this first section. I thought Rob had an answer right off like that. What's it about? Pardon me? Okay, the settling of debts, but it's actually the remission of debts, right? So they're at the end of 7 years. So remember in the Jewish economy, every 7 years they were to let their fields lie fallow. It's called the sabbatical year. And then the 50th year, so you have seven sets of seven. The 50th year is the year of Jubilee. That was a second sabbatical year in a row, and there were various regulations about it. But one of the ones here, the one that's mentioned here, is the remission of debt. So if somebody had loaned money to another Israelite, they were to be paying up through the first 6 years. Then the seventh year, it was to be remitted. We'll talk about that in just a minute. We'll talk about the details, what all this means. All right, so we're going to read the next section, verse 7 through 11. If there is a poor man with you, one of your brothers, in any of your towns in your land, which the Lord your God is giving you, you shall not harden your heart nor close your hand from your poor brother, but you shall freely open your hand to him, and you shall generously lend him sufficient for his need and whatever he lacks. Beware that there is no base thought in your heart, saying, the seventh year, their year of remission is near, and your eye is hostile toward your poor brother, and you give him nothing. Then he may cry to the Lord against you, and it will be a sin in you. You shall generously give to him, and your heart shall not be grieved when you give to him, because for this thing the Lord your God will bless you in all your work and in all your undertakings. For the poor will never cease to be in the land. Therefore I command you, saying, you shall freely open your hand to your brother, to your needy and poor in your land. All right, so what's this section about? Okay, don't find a way around the law of remission. Okay? So, it's also, I call this the law of generosity to the poor. Anybody else have something else they'd like to throw in there? Okay, so let's read the next section. Now, these are all we're gonna come back and talk about these as we go along. But it's interesting, there's certain little details, even as I'm reading it again this evening, think, oh yeah, I should mention that. But anyway, we'll see if I remember everything I'm supposed to mention. Verse 12, if your kinsman, a Hebrew man or woman, is sold to you, then he shall serve you 6 years, but in the seventh year you shall set him free. When you set him free, you shall not send him away empty-handed. You shall furnish him liberally from your flock and from your threshing floor and from your wine vat. You shall give to him as the Lord your God has blessed you. You shall remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt, and the Lord your God redeemed you. Therefore I command you this day. It shall come about, if he says to you, I will not go out from you, because he loves you and your household, since he fares well with you, then you shall take an awl and pierce it through his ear into the door, and he shall be your servant forever. Also you shall do likewise to your maidservant. All right. So what is this section about? Being generous to your slaves. Now, we're going to qualify the term slave in a little bit, so you'll understand what is meant by Hebrew slavery during the time of the Old Testament economy. All right, then verse 18. It shall not seem hard to you when you set him free, for he has given you 6 years with double the service of a hired man, so the Lord your God will bless you in whatever you do. Now, you can see that's all about the same topic. So I'm not quite sure why the translators decided this was a new paragraph. It doesn't make sense to me. It seems to fit in with the previous paragraph. All right, so we'll just skip on past that one. I called that one addendum. Oh, the first section, last section, the law of release from bondage is what I put. And then addendum to the law of release from bondage for verse 18. Verse 19, you shall consecrate to the Lord your God all the firstborn males that are born of your herd and of your flock. You shall not work with the firstborn of your herd, nor share the firstborn of your flock. You and your household shall eat it every year before the Lord your God in the place which the Lord chooses. But if it has any defect, such as lameness or blindness or any serious defect, you shall not sacrifice it to the Lord your God. You shall eat it within your gates. The unclean and clean alike may eat it as a gazelle or a deer. Only you shall not eat its blood, you are to pour it out on the ground like water. All right, so what's this last section about? Well, it's not just take care of your animals. It's a specific type of animal amongst your animals. The firstborn of the flock, the law of the firstborn. Okay, so we'll talk about all of this, and it does seem a little bit jarring. We've had this all talking about the seventh year and remission and so forth. It's all laws of economy. Or commerce, maybe, in the first part of the chapter. And then suddenly, we have this section on the firstborn of the flock. So it does seem a bit jarring, and we'll talk about that, too, as we go along. All right, so could you sum up the general theme of this chapter in one or two words? Anybody have an idea? You think about the type of laws, what this chapter is mostly about. One or two words to sum it up. Oh, love your neighbor as yourself. That's a good one. Anything else? What, Debbie?
Be generous.
Okay, be generous. And then faith? Care. Pardon me? Care, okay. Well,
Giving to others.
All right. So there's no one right answer for this. I put in my answer social justice. I thought that would be very trendy of me to say that. All right. Okay, so now we have a couple of things here. I have a little paragraph. On the law of remission of debt, some conservative commentators suggest that it was more a suspension of debt so that one would not be obliged to service his debt during the sabbatical year. In other words, you would have your debt, Along comes the sabbatical year. Well, everybody has to have their fields lie fallow, and there's no income, so it'd be impossible to be making any payments on your debt. So actually what this is a suspension of the debt, and then it resumes the next year. Now, okay, typically commentators have disagreed with this point of view. And I do also. Constable disagrees with this. And there's a couple of reasons in our text that I think show that this could not be the correct view. One is that where he talks about the generosity of the poor, why would you be worried about the nearness of the sabbatical year if you're just going to have the debt suspended for a year? What matter? But what the deal is you're said, be generous to the needy, even if he comes to you in the sixth year, the next year is a sabbatical year, and he needs some money, and you know he can't repay it. Like, he can repay you some this year because it's the sixth year. But the next year, he's not going to have anything. But what the law is saying is be generous to him anyway. Don't be, what is the term it uses there? Don't be hard in your heart. Is that how he says it? Let there be no base thought in your heart. Okay? Anyway, so let's, and then also, another reason in the text, the law is also applied to those who are in bondage. And they are to be released. So do they only get off for a year and then they're in bondage the next year? That doesn't seem to make sense. It doesn't make sense in the context. When they're released, they're released. So if the analogy would then say that the debt should be completely released also. And I think that's the correct interpretation. But I did mention it because there are some conservative commentators who take it this, it's sort of a unique way. I'd never heard of it until I was reading up on it this afternoon. All right. Gordon.
I know when I would borrow money.
Yeah, you know when you would borrow money, yeah. That's right. Cornelius.
Well, there's a theme running through. You've got the Sabbath day rest. We talked about entering his rest.
Yes.
And now you have the seventh.
Yes.
It's always the seventh, and you enter your rest. You know, you make provision, you know, for someone else.
That's right, yes.
And you as you rest from your works, you're helping him. But, you know, the whole seventh rings through, the seventh year.
Yes. Yeah, this is actually in keeping with our theme recently in Hebrews. It certainly does fit in, doesn't it? Because God is teaching them a principle they're living out an illustration of a principle that God is laying before all of us, that rest that we're looking for in the book of Hebrews. All right, so let's see what I have next. Moses gave the law. There's additional references to the sabbatical year in Exodus 23 and Leviticus 25, but only here did he mention remission of debts. The law of cancellation is stated in Deuteronomy 15:1 and explained in verses 2 through 11, one commentator says. So he makes verse 1 basically a header, and really it's a header for the whole chapter in the law. For the whole chapter. Now, what was the purpose of the law of remission of debt? So look in verse 4. What's the purpose? Addie. Well, not exactly that. It's not just justice, but there's something even a little more specific, I think. Rob?
No one poor.
No one poor, okay? Rob?
But also the land that God gave each family, the land, they were to retain it for life.
That's right. Okay, so that is tied to this law. That's tied to this law, but it's not part. Or there is a connection to this law, but it's not part of this specific part of the law. This is where they have gone into debt. Like, you're working your farm, maybe you had a bad year and you need money for seed to sow your fields. So you borrow of your neighbor. And you say, okay, well, I'll pay you back so much this year, so much the next year. And however many years you go to the sabbatical year, that's the number of years that you're going to be able to pay back. At the end of the sabbatical year, if there's any left over, then that debt is to be forgiven. Now, I think the way they would work it out is they would divide the number of years until the sabbatical year. And they would say, okay, pay this much this year, this much the next year. But you know, somebody's crops might not do so well. He might not be able to pay all that he's supposed to pay this year. And so he'd be a little bit behind. And by the time you get to that seventh year, then there would be possibly debt left over. So the idea is there'd be no poor in Israel. Okay, now, there is the idea of equality and so forth, but it's more that God had set up a system so that the people would take care of each other. Now, there is if you had a foreigner living in Israel, they didn't get their debts forgiven. Okay, that was too bad, they didn't get it. All right, now just a second. I had Gordon who was raising his hand.
So is this, if I borrow off of you 1 year, well, I've got 6 years to pay back. Daryl borrows off of you 2 years later.
Yes.
And he's got 6 years to pay
back. No, he's got 5 years to pay it back. He's got 5 years, because the sabbatical year is the same for everyone. Yeah, that's right. Okay. So that's the way it would work. And we'll get to that next section in just a minute. But the basic purpose is to eliminate poverty in Israel. That's the basic purpose. Rob?
I guess I was thinking of the year of Jubilee.
Yes, you are. But yeah, so you're getting ahead of ourselves here.
Yeah. Oh, is that in this?
It's not in this lesson, but it is really, it's not really contained in this chapter. There's a connection, but it's not really contained in this. All right.
I was thinking, when this is given in Deuteronomy,
yes,
and the Lord has promised to give them this land, and it was also promised that he would give rain in due season.
Yes.
In other words, he would bless them.
That's right.
All the great, their loyalty and everything else.
Yes.
And so he's, this is almost like Benjamin Ben.
Yeah, trust God. Yeah, he's saying trust, all right, so being generous to your neighbors, and working, and then look at verse 5 and 6. That's the next question, actually. Cal's a little ahead of us here. What would be the cause of general prosperity among the Israelites? What does verse 5 and 6 say? Faith? Okay, obeying God's commandments. So if they were to implement this system and faithfully follow it, they would have very little poverty in Israel. God's people would be taken care of. They would be looking after one another. And God, it says God would bless them, so their fields would be prosperous, and they would do well. All right, Cornelius.
Well, it all comes down, this is Israel's constitution. This is
yes.
What God gave.
Yes.
It's not a legalistic sort of thing, although we created it. If you accepted it in faith, it was good news to every Israeli.
Yes.
Or every Hebrew. Time, and it was to be accepted in faith.
Yes.
And if you followed this constitution and accepted it in faith, everything was peachy keen.
That's right. If they would follow it. The problem is there's always somebody with an angle, right? Somebody's always got an angle. And that's where these things break down. Now, why, verse 7 through 10, why did God demand generosity to poor Israelites, especially as the year of remission of debts nears? So that's verse 7 through 10. So what's God's reasoning here? All right, Maureen?
He wanted them to remember that they were once slaves in Egypt.
All right, he wanted them to remember they were slaves in Egypt. And I don't know if I've noted that one down in here. Maybe later on I did. Yes. Okay, anything else? Debbie? Okay, he wants them to love others like they are loved. All right, that's good too. All right, now, I lost my spot. Okay, all right, now, look at verse 4 and look at verse 11. Verse 4, however, there will be no poor among you, since the Lord will surely bless you in the land which the Lord your God is giving you as an inheritance to possess. So the purpose of all this was that there be no poor among you. But then look at verse 11. For the poor will never cease to be in the land. Okay? So there's an apparent contradiction. So what should we make of this apparent contradiction? Okay, what would be the... Okay, verse 4 is ideal and verse 11 is reality. All right, well, that's basically what I put. But there's a couple of other things to note. Let's see. I guess we've really covered this already. If Israel followed God's system, they would prosper. Verse 5 and 6, what is one reason that there would always be poor among Israel? Well, disobedience. Okay, but what are some other reasons that there might be always poor in Israel. Gordon?
I'm not poor today, but I might be tomorrow.
I'm not poor today, but I might be tomorrow. So that's correct. But what are the reasons that that might happen? Can you envision? Jane?
Disabilities.
Pardon me?
Disabilities.
So somebody gets injured in the job, they can't work their field, and they don't have sons who are old enough, and so there's a need. So they're going to need perhaps help in some way. All right, what is some other causes? Faith?
Death,
okay, death of the primary, like if the father of the home dies and there's the relatives aren't sufficient to take care, or the children aren't old enough to take care of the land, and so forth. What about some human failings like laziness? About the in Proverbs, the sluggard turns on his bed, he doesn't want to go out to sleep, out to work, out into the streets. There's a lion in the streets, he says, right? So. The sin nature could be a reason why you're poor, because you're not following God's will yourself in that way. Or it could be a bad year. It could be the failure of crops. Okay, so you're all of a sudden, maybe you're going along fine and your family's okay and you've got enough food, but then one year you have a bad year and for whatever reason, there's just no way to pay all your bills. And so that could be another reason. So there are always. In this broken world, there are always reasons why the poor might arise. But the general purpose and the goal was verse 4, that there would be no poor among them. God's goal with this program or with this set of laws was that the people of Israel would take care of one another. Okay? All right. Now, verse 12, we move into this bit about slavery. What might cause an Israelite to be sold into bondage? Okay, so verse 12, we mentioned this. Debbie? To pay a debt. Okay, so this is the thing. In Israel, this kind of slavery is not, it's not man-stealing, like you have, is mentioned in Romans. It's not conquering somebody in war. It's simply the man, he has no resources. He's so far behind. He feels like the only way to pay is to just sell himself into bondage to another man who's more wealthy. I'll be your bond slave, or whatever the term they used, and I'll work for you, and so forth. And so they would if you'll pay my debts, they would take on the debts and that man's labor for the next 6 or 5 or 4 years would belong to the man who paid the debts. Okay, so the year of release is also discussed in Exodus 21, verse 2. It says, if you buy a Hebrew slave, he shall serve for 6 years, but on the seventh he shall go out as a free man without payment. Right? In other words, he won't have to pay to get out of his bondage. Now, look again at verses 12 to 14. What additional requirement was placed on Israel in these verses? Besides letting the man go free, what else were they supposed to do? Debbie?
Send him out with supplies.
Send him out with supplies. Give him a grub stake, as they would call it in the Old West. They'd have to get, a little bit of something to get himself started up again. All right? And then, so the principle is sort of something like profit sharing. The value of the bonded Israelite could exceed the amount of indebtedness. It might be more than he could pay, but the effort that he gives to the person who owns the rights to his services could actually pay the person who owned him more than actually the debt that he owed. So some profit should accrue to the credit of the one heading back out on his own. That's sort of the idea, I think, behind all of this. In other words, that man has provided you 5 or 6 years of service, and that's worth something to you. It should be worth something to you to pay him or help him on his way out. Now, let's see. What was one purpose for this law of generosity to those in bondage? Verse 15. Okay, to remind them of their own redemption from slavery out of Egypt, right? That's the part that Maureen had mentioned earlier, and I thought I had brought it in, but I couldn't find it right off. Here, Here it is in verse 15. What other option was available to the bonded Israelite in verses 16 to 17? This is a curious custom, right, brother?
Well, seeing it comes into our lives now as bond slaves, that we've been redeemed.
Right.
And we can never repay the debt. And so we pledge our lives to be followers of Jesus. Only then you were so happy with your boss or your owner who owned you for that time. That you got your, if it was a sign of giving your first.
That's right.
You would live your life because with
right.
Really as an indentured slave, but really with a lot of freedom.
Right. So somebody who is, they've come to the year of the sabbatical year, they're entitled to go out free. They know that they can get so much goods to go out and start out again. But maybe they just like working for the guy. Maybe they say, no, I would rather stay and work in your household. I'd rather be a part of your household. And so then they would receive a mark in their ear that would say, this man is a lifetime indentured servant. And he becomes a part of the household in that way. All right, Faith. An awl is like a pointy screwdriver. So if you see a punch, okay, so a metal punch that comes to a point at the end, and put the guy up against the post. This does not sound pleasant to me. They'd take that up against his ear and they'd hammer it into the post. There you go. There's your mark. Now you're mine for life. That was the idea. So. Yeah. Yeah, it's like this is not something that, this does not appeal to me at all. Okay? And, but it is part of God's provision. Now again, the whole idea is that this person, it's not like he's not required to stay in service to this person, but he's saying, I like working here. I want to stay here and be a part of this family. All right, Rob?
It's always struck me as the person's taking on a job, a paying job. This is his employer.
Well, he's getting his room and board paid.
Oh, okay.
Right? He's not getting pay as such, but he just likes it so well he doesn't want to leave. All right.
Well, did Apostle Paul identify himself as a bond slave?
Yes, he did. Although it's a different concept in the New Testament, though. We have to note that. All right, Marlene. Onesimus. Now he was a different kind of a slave. He's a slave in the Roman system. Where he came from, nobody knows. But in the Roman system, people were slaves sometimes for debt. Sometimes because the Romans came to their country, they killed anybody who resisted, took the rest of them captive, sold them off as slaves. So in the Roman society, it was man-stealing, which the Bible forbids. Okay, so Onesimus, the New Testament's different. So you don't want to make the same connection. In the Old Testament, the whole idea is we're a community and we're taking care of each other. And this is how, and it's also, it all is mostly, I've been talking about fields and crops and so forth. It's mostly an agrarian economy. There's not, big manufacturing or things like that. It's all working fields and so forth. So there is, there are various things that people would do. Rob mentioned the year of Jubilee and the retention of lands. So somebody who's not doing very well, they may decide, I just can't support myself. I'll sell my fields. Well, you would sell your fields up until the year of Jubilee. You're selling a right to the use of that field. It's still your field. But you don't have the right of it. If you sell it in year 2 of the period, you've got 48 years to wait for that land to come back to your family if you live that long. A guy could conceivably not be a very good manager of money, could constantly find himself in debt, and he finally, maybe in year 15, he sold all his land, so he says, okay, I'll sell myself. And then after 7 years, he says, I kind of like it. So he becomes a permanent servant of that household. If he lives long enough, his field comes back to him in year 50. He's still a servant of the other guy. But he now has fields of his own that he can work or hire somebody to work or whatever. All right.
Is he allowed to get married and have kids?
Yes, there is provision for that in the Hebrew law. It's not mentioned in this chapter. All right, Rob?
I guess I've always looked at the year of Jubilee as well because that came from the Jewish. It wasn't before the time of Moses, right? So it was given to as part of the... Israel. Jacob going into the land.
You think you're right?
Aren't I right about that part? Joshua, let's see.
I think you're getting something messed up in your head there.
Let me say, the point is bigger than that.
Okay. Even if you're confused, what's your point?
Yeah, okay. Isn't it the dividing up of the tribes and the land that is when they are given the land?
Yes, when the land was divided up, it was divided up amongst the families.
Yeah.
It was after the law. It was after all of this was delivered.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to say.
Okay, but it, and.
With the bigger point being, sorry, this is what I was trying to say.
Yeah.
That to me, it always struck me at this part of your Jubilee, dividing up the land, is how important this land is. God has given this land to the Jews or Israel for eternity, basically.
Yes.
And, like, this is how important. Takes the land laws to give it not just to the nation but individual families.
Right.
Retained, and had the Jews been obedient,
they
would basically still be there.
That's right. That's right. If Israel had obeyed the Lord and if they had accepted their Messiah, now this is all presupposition, but if they had accepted their Messiah, the Romans would never have driven them out. Okay? I mean, the Messiah still would have died, I guess, but the Romans would never have driven them out. Okay. Anyhow, but that's all. If wishes were horses, beggars would ride. Right. Okay. Another wisdom from sayings. Okay. Okay. Finally, what was the additional motivation did Moses give to the wealthy Israelite who was setting his brother free from his bondage? Verse 18. Okay, faith.
Blessings from God.
Okay, blessings from God, all right? And also what else? There's another thing that he mentions in that verse that's very specific. Pardon me?
Twice the pay.
Well, what he's saying is, look, if you had to hire somebody to do that same work, it would cost you more. Right? So you should be generous to your indentured servant because he's doing it he's not doing it for nothing, but you're not having to pay anything for him. Right? Okay, so that's the difference there. All right. So the next section seems an abrupt change of focus. However, the law regarding firstborn animals may have occurred here in Moses' sermon because like the laws of canceled debts and releasing servants, it involved giving up one's possessions. So that's one suggestion made by a commentary. So the summary of the law of the firstborn. So in Exodus 13 is the first mention to teach the succeeding generations about redemption from Egypt. Exodus 22, firstborn animals were to be given to the Lord on the eighth day, interestingly enough. I didn't research to see if there was any significance to that. And then Numbers 18, firstborn animals were part of the means by which Israel supported the priests. Now, what details do we find added here in verse 19? What are they not to do with these firstborn animals? What's that? Not put them to work, okay? Or not shear the... Okay, so what's the point of that?
They're consecrated.
Those animals belong to God. You're not to benefit from them. Okay, the firstborn of each you and of each cow or whatever, okay? What was to be done with the firstborn animals? Verse 20. Faith. Okay, so to eat it with your family in the place that God chooses. So what does that mean when it says the place that God chooses?
Jerusalem,
ultimately. Okay, so what when he's saying that, to eat it with your family, it says before the Lord. What does that language signify? Pardon me?
At the temple.
at the temple or at the tabernacle. This is a sacrificial feast. So these would be fellowship. This would be a kind of fellowship offering. So the people would gather at the temple with their firstborn animals. They would be slaughtered. There would be a great feast. And there would be a time of rejoicing. That's the idea. All right? It's possible.
Because
it's
synonymous, you know, because when there was three times the crowds that, you know, came,
yes,
to Jerusalem a year.
Yes. Passover is one of them. And the next chapter begins to talk about that. I'm not sure. I think it talks about all three of them. So I'm not certain. It could be Passover, but I'm not certain these are the Passover lambs. I think this is the law of the firstborn. I'm not 100% certain on this, and the commentaries didn't say anything. So that's why I'm waffling on you here. Okay? But the thing is, there would be a feast before the Lord. Now, there's a little extra wrinkle here. What about firstborn animals with a defect? The rest of the chapter, the last three verses, talk about that. What happens to them? Okay, Faith?
Don't sacrifice it to God.
Okay, you don't sacrifice it to God, but what do you do with it? Pardon? I can't quite hear because we got. Okay, so you don't eat it with the blood, but what are you? How are you dealing with this animal?
At home.
You're eating it at home. You don't have to take that one down to the temple. All right, and presumably you would have to redeem it if it had a defect. Presumably you'd have to substitute it for one that is, you know, that would be its, you know, substitute to go down to the feast in Jerusalem or wherever it is. But these you could eat just like you would like you would with a gazelle or a deer. So what does that imply? It's like your normal. If you're going to eat meat at home, you're allowed to slaughter a gazelle or a deer or any other clean animal, as long as you're not, if you're eating it with the blood, and you're pouring out its blood and you're not sacrificing it to a god, then you could eat it like meat at home. That was the regulation. Now, it may seem all curious to us, but again, it's God trying to establish his priority and to take care of each other in Israel. When they had these feast times, the implication of other passages is that many other people were involved. And so people would be gathering for at the temple, and it would be a time of great rejoicing. And many people would be taking part, even those who had many to offer and those who had few to offer. That's the impression that I get. All right, so the last paragraph comes from Constable. He says, as Christians, we too should acknowledge God's goodness if he increases our possessions. Our sacrifices need not be literal firstborn animals of our herds or flocks, but they might be verbal thanksgiving, Hebrews 13:15, and our labor, our money, indeed our very lives, Romans 12:1-2. We too should give him our best. That's what Constable says in application. All right, any final thoughts or comments as we've gone through this chapter? I find that as we read this, we are reading about a culture that is quite alien to us. It's a long ways from us. So some of their practices are very curious and seem hard to understand, but it is interesting. Marlene, you wanted to say something? Well, I think it's more an indication of the that they're not offering it as a sacrifice to an idol. They're slaughtering it in a certain proper way. Basically, I guess the term we would use today would be kosher. They'd be doing it in a kosher way, so that the animal was acceptable for the Israelite to eat. So it has to do with God's prohibition against idolatry and also cleanness and uncleanness and things like that. There might be a connection with the blood of the Lord, but it's quite a long connection. Be quite drawn out, I think. All right, any other comments or questions? Okay, well, let's have a word of prayer and we'll close for tonight. Our Father, thank you again for your word. It gives us insight into how you cared for people in the past, how you intended God, for Israel to live. Lord, I pray that as we think about these things, we might consider how we can be generous and kind and helpful in our own lives to those who are in our community, to those who are working with us in the church, that we can support one another in various ways, and that you can bless our church and our ministry through the kind of lives we lead. We pray these things in Jesus' name. Amen.